Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast for this week. This week, we're talking about unconventional leadership. And leadership can be something that we aren't necessarily taught. Often people who are skilled in another role are lifted into leadership positions. But how can you bring some of yourself into your leadership roles? This is a great conversation. We have a lot of laughs. And join the Spotify stream because you can see John goes on a bit of a journey. So I recommend checking that out. As always, enjoy the episode and have a magical week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast for this week. This week, we have once again got the dream team in, which is very exciting. So, got all the great people from Magical Learning, just us three, the official tripod of the podcast, the tripodcast, we should call it. But let's get started here. Graham, how's your week going?
Hey, Jess, I've had a good week. Thank you for asking. Been a productive week at home. And heading to Sydney in approximately an hour to collect Annette from the airport when she flies back in. And then we're going to spend a few days in Sydney. But it's been a good week.
Nice, nice. And Danette is currently in Fiji.
So the story goes. I've seen no pictorial evidence of that, but yes. She's been at a conference over there since Sunday.
Wow. Yeah, it's been looking pretty good from the images I've seen. So good for Danette. And you were also saying, Graham, you've got an obscene amount of eggs.
So for those who don't already know, we probably need to start a separate podcast just for the birds. So we have two chickens and five guinea fowl of indeterminate gender. Well, the guinea fowl anyway. But at the moment, we're collecting around four eggs a day. Even when both of us are home, Danette and I would collectively consume 0.03 eggs per day. So we're building up a nice little stockpile for Halloween in just over a week's time.
Absolutely. And look, I think that we should consider doing the Magical Learning Poultry Podcast as just at least if not a recurring segment, it could be its own spin-off.
I think an ML Chook cast would be awesome. Yeah, we should do that, definitely.
Well, that's great. Thanks for that, Graham. John, how are you going? You're sort of en route. What's happening?
Yeah, I'm on the move. My wife has rung me and needs help with packing and driving a truck. So for the business, the styling business that she has. So, yeah, I'm sort of heading off to do some of that. And it's just going to be the start of the weekend, because then I've got to get up in the roof of my son's house and move insulation around, which is not going to be fun.
Lucky you, John. You got a lot of good projects on there.
I feel really bad now about just going to Sydney and hanging out on Manly Beach for the weekend. So is there any painting in there, John? Will you be doing any painting at all?
that's kind of on hold because the wife's not sure. She sort of doesn't mind the old colour now, which is only on one side of the of the house. So we may be reverting back to that too. But thank you for bringing up such a painful memory.
Is it a painful memory?
Happy to help.
Or is it a painful memory?
Oh, no. Jez, how has your week been other than hilarious so far?
Look, it's been pretty good. I've been trying out this new thing with stand-up where I'm doing a bit of music, adding some music to it. Not like whole songs yet, but like little 10, 15-second bites. And I thought I'd try it out. I went up and did some on Wednesday. And I basically just learned how to do the Seinfeld theme song. So at the end of my jokes, I just play that bow, 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 which, it's pretty good. And so I was like, oh, well, this is good. I'm so happy I tried out this music thing. And then the person who was last on that night was a classically trained pianist who absolutely demolished me. It was amazing. It was a great performance. He's also a great stand-up. But he was also just trying out something, and he used to, he was like went to the conservatorium for the arts and everything. So I'm glad I tried it out that night when I got brutally shown up. But you live and learn.
But did he? So did the classically trained pianist play the guitar?
He didn't. No.
So what? He's got nothing. So you'd be like Rodney Rood without the inappropriate language.
Yes.
Nothing's like Rodney Rood.
Well, today we're going to be talking about unconventional leadership, which I thought was an interesting topic because I think unconventional leadership often gets highlighted because I think it's often sort of breaking new ground and people can find inspiration from it. But I also think that being an unconventional leader can be in many different ways. I would consider Danette and Graham, you two both unconventional leaders in a very positive way. Early adopters to working from home, lots of different things. You know, there's a lot of support to like learn on the job. I think all of that's been really impressive. But I guess before we get into this conversation, Kanika did have a good question, which is, what's a good way to kind of look at conventional leadership so then we can sort of look at unconventional leadership? So before we even get into our first question, really, do you have any sort of ideas that you would associate maybe with more conventional leadership, either John or Graham?
I'll jump in. I think, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, for me, the idea of conventional leadership is pretty much gone. I mean, the way I sort of think about conventional leadership is we used to look at leaders as people who were leaders because they were in a position of authority or power or leverage rather than because of their attitude and their behaviour. And that certainly worked for a long time. But I think today, I don't know that we actually pay that much attention to somebody just because they have authority or power. I suspect we tend to pay more attention to people today because they are showing up in a way that adds value to the world. John?
Yeah, look, I tend to agree. I think the conventional ways, you know, they had the big office. They were the head of the company. They wielded all the power and authority and control. You did as you were told, or otherwise you'll punt it out the door. So, yeah, conventional, you know, leaders, management were that role. And, you know, when you talk about unconventional leaders, it's, to me, it's people that think more broadly or think outside the box or do things differently.
Amazing. Yeah, well, I think that's a great way to frame this conversation. Because I think that is sort of like a great way to look at sort of traditional and conventional leadership. But I might start with you today, Graham, with our first question here, which is, what are some unconventional ways you've seen leaders act? Was it positive or negative?
So one that springs to mind is Seth Godin. And if for listeners, watchers, if you don't know or haven't heard of Seth, then just jump on Google. Seth, so we first got to see, listeners, Seth give a talk at a conference virtually years ago. And so part of Seth's leadership style, if you like, is not watching what everybody else is doing and then copying that or trying to do it better, but he just does things because he believes it's a good way of showing up in the world. And he's very much about doing things of significance and bringing, you know, more of yourself into the world. And one of his favorite sayings, I believe he says a lot, is this may not work. Yeah, so the idea is that if you have something to share with the world, then share it. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. You'll never know until you actually do it. So an example of Seth doing something that I thought was phenomenal at the time was he published a book, hardcover. I don't know, call it 300 pages. The paper quality is exceptional. It's full color. It's an incredible piece of work. It also weighs just over 7 kilograms. It is huge. It is, it would be, what's that, 400 mil by 200 mil. It's a massive thing. We had to ship two of them back from Canada. It cost us, actually, we ended up buying an extra suitcase because it was cheaper than the freight. But for me, that just having the courage to do something that you believe is a good thing to do, and it may not work, but do it anyway. So that's a positive for me. One other thing that also came from a conference we went to one of Robin Sharma's events in, I think this one was 2013 in Toronto, and had a conversation with a guy who was part of a company that were planning to build 1 million low-cost homes in South Africa, and they were setting up their own bank so they can provide basically interest-free finance to people who couldn't afford to go through normal channels. Again, conventional builders, conventional banks, finance companies, property developers don't think that way at all. So they were two hugely positive. One negative example sort of jumps out, some guy called Trump. Enough said.
Well, I think those are all great examples, Graham, of different things. And I think, you know, regardless of people's position on Trump, he definitely has conjured something with some people. He's definitely
leading. No question. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's tapped into something. But yes, I do agree with that that idea about Seth Godin's book. I do remember the book. I've held it. It is massive. But it is also extremely impactful. Like, I won't ever forget that book, you know, because anytime I see a big book, I'll go, that's not a book. This is a book, you know.
Kind of book.
So yeah, love those examples. Thanks, Graham.
Pleasure.
John, I'll go to you now. What are some unconventional ways you've seen leaders act? Was it positive or negative?
So for me, and tell me if the background noise is too loud and I'll just pull over and stop.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
So for me, there was a boss I used to have. He was a program manager in a big corporate company, and we're in the government department doing some stuff. But he was very, very demanding of his staff, to the point where he was quite happily to talk about how one of his staff had a heart attack at work, and he sort of stood there and suggested that they should still keep working, as they're being, you know, the people are, the ambulance is coming there to look after them and take them away. And it's like, but he was proud of that fact. He thought it was a good story and didn't see what was wrong with it. And you're just going, have you got no understanding about what impact that has on people? And none of us liked him because of, you know, the tyrant that he was, really. And in terms of another leader, and this guy was both good and bad, and he got brought in into a senior role to do a particular job. But we were doing some work on a site in a small country town here in Australia, in New South Wales, and we were having problems with the printers and trying to get the printers to work. Well, he was on the phone with all the techos trying to solve and work through the problem. He was obviously very technical. And that was his input into it. Now, part of it, the bad part was he was also trying to control and manage it, and they had to keep going forward. There was no backing out. But part of it was he was there when we needed help, trying to help. And for a CIO in a government department, that is unheard of. So, two examples.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think, you know, I think you kind of bring up a good point, John, because it's like, it's not always necessarily going to be positive or negative entirely one way or the other. Sometimes it's going to have, you know, sort of costs and benefits each style.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I think, you know, everyone brings something to the table, but is it enough to outweigh the deficit they're bringing? And you mentioned Trump. Well, I'm sure he's got some good qualities.
He's good at getting people into, I guess, go to his rallies or something. But, well, John, you kind of remind me, though, because the example I wanted to bring up in terms of unconventional leaders, not intentionally, but I was coaching a basketball team, and my thoughts on coaching were not the same way that the parents saw it. So for me, I was teaching some young kids, I think it was under 12s, basketball. And my whole philosophy with that was, how can I get them to enjoy basketball so that they go and practice it by themselves? You know, like, that's where I was at. Because if they don't like it, then they're not going to get better at it. It's just, they'll do other stuff with their free time. But their parents were extremely interested in everybody making rep from the team, which is definitely not my style. So anytime I was trying to do things that were team building or helping them enjoy the sport of basketball, they were shutting that down and asking if I could, you know, push them harder and do stuff like that. So I ended up having to quit, which again, I think was, you know, in terms of if it was a positive or a negative, I think it was probably both, because I think those kids probably did take away, it wasn't their fault that, you know, this is what the parents wanted. They probably took away some fun elements from that. And I know that they looked forward to the trainings and everything, but But at the same time, it was a negative in terms of how the parents were viewing it, just because that's not necessarily what they were looking for, which is fine. You know,
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at, and sport being a great analogy, if you want to look at unconventional, there are plenty of movies around, whether it be the Coach Carters or, you know, To Sir with Love or Remember the Titans or the Woody Harrelson one that he's got out about the basketball team. You know, people doing things differently and getting fantastic results.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Well, anyway, John, I'll stay with you now. And this is, I guess, more sort of, advice things, which is, what are some techniques leaders can use that are unconventional that you've seen work?
The biggest advice, and I thought about this question a bit and trying to work out, well, what advice do you give? But to me, it's be yourself. And if you've gotten to a management position, being yourself, continue to do that, because that's what people are responding to. That's why you're there. Hopefully you're not the last one to step back, and that's why you got the job, but you actually got it as a reward for work you do. So keep doing those things. Just because you get up into a higher position or a position of authority doesn't mean you should change who you are. You've got to be true to yourself, because otherwise you're not going to enjoy going to work, which will make everyone else miserable around you. And the workplace becomes a misery for all and all that's going there. So, yeah, just be yourself and be true to yourself.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a great way to go forward. I think if you don't know what to do, I think that's a great way, especially if it's already gotten you to this position.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Graham, what are some techniques leaders can use that are unconventional that may be positive?
I love John's idea of, because I've just realized that I got here because Danette stepped back faster than I did. Damn. I also had, so one of the things I had written down was, you know, be yourself. Comparison's a real problem. And, you know, John was talking about some of the out there before that have some of them have ties to real life sporting situations. Some of them are just probably based on someone's idea. But the challenge sometimes is that we can start comparing ourselves with other people who are perceived to be really good leaders. And the comparison is always fraught with danger, because when you start comparing yourself with somebody else, there's just a whole bunch of things that can come out of that, and most of them aren't positive. So I agree, I mean, 1,000,000% with John, this idea of being yourself. And just going back to John's comment about, you know, the more you move through an organization, or the further up the hierarchy you go in some organizations, you know, the more important it becomes to continue to remember who you are, because the higher you go, in a lot of cases, the more pressure there is on you to conform to what are the accepted, you know, stereotype is for a leader at that level in that organization, sort of thing. So continuing to be true to yourself becomes even harder. And it's not easy, because I hope I'm not the only one on planet Earth who from time to time has asked themselves, who are you? And I've got no real answer at times. So, you know, the other thing I was going to say just around this idea of, you know, unconventional techniques is do the inner work. And I think this is one of the ways that we learn a bit more about who we are and what feels right in how we show up. So it's spending less time comparing ourselves with others and looking at others and looking to see what they're doing. It's spending less time following leaders on social media, because what you see on social media, of course, is a completely 100% accurate depiction of who they are as a human being. Said no one ever. So I think, you know, doing more of the inner work and spending more time, yes, contemplating your navel, whether you like it. And if you don't like your navel, there's a great place to start.
What are you talking about? Contemplating your navel, Graham. I feel like I've missed something.
Sorry, it's probably a 13th century reference. So I heard it when I was young. It was just a a saying that people used to use when they were dissing the self-help movement, and this whole idea of reflection was you just sit, you know, in it like the Buddha pose with your head down and just contemplate your navel, because yeah, Buddha had a nice big tummy and he didn't have to strain too hard to be able to see it. So, yeah,
okay,
it's spending more time looking inwards rather than looking out.
That's easier if you have an innie, I guess, than an outie when it comes to navels. Anyway.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Cheers. I'm glad you're here. Just adding some sanity to this.
Yes. Well, that's all good wisdom there, Graham. I'm definitely going to walk away considering that question for sure after this. But the final question I was going to ask, and I'll stay with you here, Graham, but I just want to tee it up a little bit. So my final question is, how can people bring their uniqueness to leadership? And I just wanted to say, like, you know, if this hasn't been already broadly explained properly, but, you know, with a lot of the leaders that I think of when I think of great leaders, whether it's, you know, Martin Luther King, or if it's Rosa Parks, or if it's Steve Jobs, or if it's anything like that, they're always unconventional in what they're doing. It's always something that's either hasn't been done, or they're doing it in a really effective way. And so it's always really powerful and potent when people bring their own uniqueness to any leadership. And I think another example of that recently for me is the film company A24, which is, I think, won the last two best pictures. They did Parasite and Everything Everywhere All at Once, but they keep making low budget films that gross a lot of money and then are extremely successful in award seasons. It's because they're doing movies that aren't being done by other people. They're kind of stepping into their own sort of strange areas and taking a chance in a world that we have a lot of, you know, Marvel films and films that sort of are quite similar. I think they've gone, well, we'll just do other random stuff and see if people like it. And I think that they've created their own niche. And I think it's because they just lent into everyone's uniqueness. They said, you know, you be unique and we'll just see how it goes. So I think that's why uniqueness can be a positive. But Graham, staying with you, how can people bring their uniqueness to leadership?
Probably, I'd love to compare, like, you know, some of the great leaders that we appreciate or that we acknowledge from the past, Mandela, Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, Mother Teresa. One of the common themes with all of those people seems to be that they just had a clear and compelling vision as to what they needed to do with their life. It's like, what is your big why in your life? And it's never about, well, I don't believe it is. Typically, it is something that is much bigger than you. So it's like, how do I contribute to the rest of humanity? Not just humanity, actually. How do I contribute to planet Earth? How do I contribute to the universe? What am I adding? So when we have a really clear and compelling vision of why we're on this planet, that's the thing that gives us the energy and the courage and the humility to be able to be more of ourselves. The tricky part about finding your clear and compelling why is sometimes it might smack you in the forehead, but other times it's often on the other side of your belly button. And by the way, I'm not recommending any form of at-home surgery to see what's behind. Don't do that. This is it's a metaphor thing. You know what I mean? Sometimes we just have to spend more time with ourselves and a lot less time looking at what everybody else is doing to try and work out why are we here. And one other thing, sorry, that was a really long answer. The only other thing I was going to say is find a tribe. So just find some other people who are perfectly okay with you being you or the current version of you, so that you're not doing it all on your own. You've got some other people there to help you feel that it's okay for you to be a little bit weird, because we are all a little bit weird and we need to actually share that with everyone.
100%. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think that's a good point, is that being weird is a crucial part of this. And just being around people that accept that as opposed to reject that can be really, really helpful. So love that point, Graham. John, I'll go to you now. How can people bring their uniqueness to leadership?
I love that idea of Graham's about the humility. And look, I don't know whether, you know, Luther King or Jobs or Rosa Parks or Mandela or anyone that you want to you know, Napoleon, whoever you want to classify as a leader, were humble. And I dare say that there are a lot of great leaders who definitely aren't humble. And they demand as much of themselves as they do of anyone else that they work for. But I guess, you know, to me, I look up to people that actually walk the talk. So, you know, they might be the first one there and the last one out and expect high things of themselves. They're not the ones out playing golf while you're doing all the work. You know, they lead from the front. A leader is someone that you want to follow because they're at the front. You know, and whether it's the front of innovation, it's the front of a movement, whether it's the front of work, but they're doing things. For me, there's a guy at work, and we, every now and again, well, you've got Easter and you've got Christmas and you've got, you know, different days. He will come dressed up every single time. And it's amazing the amount of effort that he puts into this. So when it comes to an event where people have to dress up, you know, so you're encouraged to come as whatever theme. He leads from the front, but because of what he's done, people are now prepared to follow, whereas I wouldn't have done that. I heard a story about Branson at one stage where he will go into the various offices around the world and he'll hot desk. He doesn't walk in saying, "I'm Branson, where's my corner office?" It's, "Is that desk spare? Yep, I'll sit there." And people are just going, "Oh my God, I'm sitting right next to Richard Branson. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what do I do? Like, shit, I've got to actually work today." But it's those small things that a leader does that, you know, shows their humility, shows that they are human, shows that they're down to earth, that they're prepared to slog it out with everyone else. And I think they're the things that make a difference. You know, some of the great speeches, like Luther King's speech, Luther King Jr.'s speech, it's "I Had a Dream." And he's talking about what he sees for the world. And it just happened to inspire everyone to have the same sort of dream. And as Simon Sinek talks about, you've got, what, several hundred thousand people turn up and there was no internet posts, there was no telephones, there was no, you know, no reason that they should have been there or should have known about it, but everyone turned up because they wanted to follow what he was talking about. So to me, it's, you know, find your passion and preach your passion.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that I think I've kind of taken away from both you, especially what you're talking about there, John, but Graham, you mentioned something around this before that kind of has made me think of something, which is that you can draw so much energy from good ideas. Like if it's well painted and you understand it and you believe it, you can actually absorb energy just from that idea because it can inspire you to go do other things or what have you. It's fascinating how potent that is. That can be as a skill. John, I'll stay with you for any final thoughts you had on today's conversation and unconventional leadership.
Well, I guess me being in the car was quite unconventional to start with compared to what we normally do. You know, and part of why we work well as a group together and even why this podcast kind of works is it is different to what is going on. And, I don't know, embrace that difference. Magical learning, to me, going in, and going into a training program or training room and they've got stuff laid out on the table for you to play with. It's like, should that happen? You know, but to me, that was a very small thing, but very unconventional, but made a difference to the learning and the engagement we had with people. So again, it doesn't need to be big, but do something that's a bit different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love that, John. Yeah. Thanks for that. And great insights today. I've loved it. Graham, over to you. Any final thoughts on today's conversation and unconventional leadership?
I'd love just John reminding me of the, you know, the things that we used to put on the table in workshops. And I remember running a procurement workshop in Canberra for a public sector department once, and people walked in the door and saw all the stuff laid out on the desk and turned around and walked out because they thought they were in the wrong room. Interesting. For me, it's... So just two things. Don't do this like bringing your uniqueness out, you know, bringing your weirdness into the world. Social media encourages to do it in a, hey, look at me way, which is not what leadership's about. Leadership is about how do I serve? You know, how do I contribute? how can I be of service to somebody else? So it's not, hey, look at me. It's, I'm just going to show up and I'm going to do this because I think it's a good thing to do or a right thing to do. And I'm not doing it because I want recognition or I want a million TikTok followers. I'm doing it because it's significant and it contributes. I think more than anything else, that's the big takeaway for me.
Amazing. Well, thank you both so much for a great podcast. This was so fun. I feel like I heard some really fun stories. I learned some really interesting stuff. To everybody that's been listening and sharing, thank you so much. The listenership's been growing, so we appreciate that if you've been sending this out to people. I also want to say, if you do have any examples of unconventional leaders, you can jump onto our Spotify and there'll be a little question tab. Chuck it in there because we'd be really fascinated to hear some of your examples.
Love to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you have been listening to this and wanted to watch John's journey, you jump on Spotify again because you can actually watch the video of him driving. So that was a thrills a minute there.
And Jez, I was just going to say, folks, if you stay in for the last 45 seconds, you'll get to see John being given a ticket by a police officer.
Nah, hands free.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much. Everybody that's been listening, thank you so much. And as always, everybody, have a magical week.